Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. And man, we are entering the, what is it, about the third week, Eric, of October now?
Yes, we're getting close to Halloween.
You would think that I would know, like being a hunter, what, you know, day of the month it is. I just really am looking for cold fronts. I'm not thinking about what the date is. I guess I am as I'm getting closer to the end of the month. But, well, man, how are you doing?
Pretty good, man. This, you're right, though. This up and down weather is a little bit of a bummer.
Are you getting any miles in on the bike?
Not recently. Yeah. Honestly, man, I've thought about this. I need to find somebody on the podcast that I can just text back and forth with that we can, like, let's get out there and do it, man.
I know. Yeah. I'm telling you, when you have encouragement and someone, like, holding you capable, I hate the word accountability, hold me capable. Sometimes that when I hear the word, like, I'm going to hold you accountable, I feel like I'm reporting to a parole officer or something. That's when I talk about accountability groups. I think that's a great thing, but you got to be careful, you know, how you kind of word it with your guys. So they kind of feel like you're leading by holding yourself capable, too, to make these. Anyhow, that's a whole other thing. I'm going too deep too fast.
But seriously, though, if there is anyone, especially in my area, that would even want to ride or whatever, but yeah, reach out to the show.
I was talking to a guy the other day. He called me, and he was he's a competitive shooter, and not archery, but with pistol. He lives in, southeastern Pennsylvania, somewhere near Carlisle, and he's got a men's ministry that he does some stuff. And he called me on the phone, and we're talking, and he's like, man, you know, I've just kind of gotten out of the whole thing with working out. And because I was talking about how important it is, you know, body, soul, spirit, you know, when we're talking about growing in Christ. And by the time we got done, I was just really trying to encourage him. As we're talking, he pulls into a YMCA, and he goes, dude, I'll see you in about 45 minutes. And he calls me afterwards and he goes, I needed that so bad. So yeah, hey, you guys, if you're out there and you are trying to get healthy, you know, whether it's your diet, you know, whether it's your exercise, it is so important to have someone that loves you for who you are, knowing that your identity doesn't come from, you know, whether you're overweight, whether you're underweight, how big you are, how much money you got, you know, your identity comes from the one who made everything there is. So we want to encourage you with that. Well, anyhow, today is going to be a great day. We've got a special guest on here, Terry Peer from Chasing Giants. And before I kind of introduce him, we had a question. And what was the question that came in?
Have you ever been charged by a big deer buck?
Twice. Well, no, once, honestly. My buddy had shot one with a bow, and we were tracking it, and he only single-lunged it, and it went underneath a log. And I came walking up on this thing, and it was like in this bowl shape, where the only way he could come out was straight at me. So whether he was charging me or not, I have no idea. But he did get invited for dinner after that, so it was a good thing. And then, oh, this is really cool. Terry, before I introduce you, I'll just kind of share this. Really neat. So I learned a couple of things this weekend while I was out hunting. And I always talk about how challenges are gifts, because if you learn something from it, it's a gift. And this is really funny. So I'm up in my tree stand, and it was really windy. I think it was it last Wednesday or whatever it was? It was sustained winds of almost 20 and wind gusts of about 30. You know, and those are the days when everything is just kind of moving. It's kind of hard to pick out, you know, an ear, you know, twitching or a tail or whatever. And I was there in my stand a little bit early, and I'm thinking, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and sort some of my photos and get rid of some of those ones so that if I want to shoot a video of an animal, I'm not maxed out on my phone memory stuff. And so I'm doing this, and I got too busy looking at my phone for about a half hour. And for whatever reason, they were up feeding a little bit early, and I look up, and there's this maternal doe. She's about 12 yards in front of me doing that little head bob, you know, trying to get me to move. And I went, son of a gun. Because I was trying to bring home a little freezer meat before we get into the rut stuff. But so anyhow, so this is what's really cool. So it's time, you know, to get out of the stand. It was probably about 10:30, 11 in the morning. I'm going to get out for lunch, head back around 3. And I have my bow hanging up, you know, and I was at high stand about 20 feet. I thought, I'm just going to leave everything. You know, this is some of my buddy's property. I'm the only one that he allows to hunt on it. So I get down. And I walk about 15 yards, and I was going to freshen up a scrape that I had there. And it was a mock scrape that I had put in weeks and weeks ago. And as I'm doing that, I turn and I start to walk away. And here comes this crashing through the woods. Here comes three does, and this probably 125-inch, you know, I don't know, 2.5-year-old, he's chasing these does hard. The does get within about 10 to 15 yards of me and stop. They don't see me. This buck runs right up to me. He's 10 feet. Now get this. He's 10 feet away from me. I'm totally camoed face mask, but I'm not standing by a tree, so I thought he'd pick me out. He doesn't. He's too focused on whatever doe he was chasing, and he lets out a snort wheeze or sniff wheeze, as you want to call it, and I swear he had snot on me. He was that close. You know, I've seen it from a distance. I've heard it, but to be standing that close where you literally could have just taken a little pebble and hit him on the nose, that was pretty cool. Anyhow, let me kind of get into what we're going to be doing here. This last weekend, I was down in Southern Indiana. I spoke for, the Fight Club. It's a small group men's study that they were doing and invited me to come. And the reason was because they were using, my last book, The Roar Within, as their small group men's study. And it was kind of a surprise to the guys that they were going to bring me in. And we did an entire men's conference that morning as a part of it. And it was awesome. And don't let me forget, Eric, I think I threw you a video. And at the very end of today, I want to bring that up. They're so powerful. Anyhow, moving on. So, you know, I love seeing, you know, men supporting men. And there is a couple of guys that have meant a lot to me, even though our guest today, he and I have never met face-to-face. We've had numerous conversations. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, it was about almost a year ago now when I was speaking with our guest today, Terry Peer, and I was starting to black out. I was really dizzy. I don't know if Terry, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, dude, have you checked your blood pressure? And so I got my gauge out and I was 233 over 130. And there was nobody home. And I wouldn't have even thought about checking. It's a guy thing. Yeah, it'll go away, kind of a deal. And I ended up getting to have, you know, hospitalized and get scans done on my, all kinds of fun stuff. But so you guys have heard me talk before about the Chasing Giants with Don Higgins and Terry Peer. And I find myself watching this show. Every time the new episode comes out, you might as well just kind of scratch the next hour and 15 minutes because I'm going to be sitting there before I can get my work done watching to see what they've got out. So I want to invite you guys to, you can check out Chasing Giants TV. You can go on, you know, on YouTube or whatever. But we have with us, now Terry, I asked you, I said something, can you send me a bio? And you said, dude, I'm just your average guy. I'm just a sinner saved by grace. And so there's his intro. That's what he wanted. And I can tell
that's all I am.
But it's an honor.
Yeah, it's a shame we haven't gotten to actually sit down and in person and meet yet, but it's always a good time to chat with you. You know, it's this whole thing started with our relationship when Real World Wildlife Products, who Don Higgins is the majority owner in, and a lot of us have different interests in it. We made a pivot. Instead of hiring influencers on social media, we basically hired ministers and missionaries with that same budget. And that's when we first partnered with you and said, if we're going to put our dollar and our mouth where our, you know, it needs to be and using this business to glorify God and, you know, grow the kingdom, I don't need Instagram influencers out there, you know, taking pictures like it looks like the Yeti Instagram page. I need people out there telling people about Jesus. And we truly believe that our business has grown and flourished because of our commitment to do that. And you're one piece of that we wanted to invest in your ministry. And I think I told you from the very beginning, you kept saying, what do you want me to talk about? Or what do you want me to pass out? I'm like, Jesus. That's it. I don't care if one person buys something. It's a matter of what we're doing for the kingdom. And since then, we've gotten to be what we considered friends. You're a contributor to our Sunday night prayer time, which who would have thought deer hunting would have allowed a podcast to spin off to do a weekly devotion for people to get encouragement every week from a lot of just different guys. It's pretty humbling, to be honest with you.
And Terry, how has that changed? Because there for a while, it was on just Sunday nights. And how have you changed that around now with where guys that want to see this?
Yeah. So the interesting thing about our podcast is we have such a large Amish following, Don, because I think it goes back to him writing books and magazine articles. The Amish and Mennonite community don't have access to YouTube. So our Amish following to the podcast is very big through a phone service called MTech. So those folks who don't have internet and they have just a flip phone, they'll actually call a number every week and listen to an hour podcast on speakerphone with all their friends or their family on the way to work or out at their, you know, they don't have technology in their homes for the most part, from what I understand. But those folks couldn't go and watch the Sunday night prayer time because it was only on YouTube, or I would post it on my Facebook page. So we actually just started putting it at the end of our show every week so that that audio would be captured for the people who want to stay on at the end of the podcast. They could stay on and listen to the audio through the call-in service that they use. And then, of course, we have it just as a standard video that releases on Sunday nights also. So a lot more people get a chance to listen to it now.
Yeah, I know this is my week to be on this coming weekend. So that airs on Sunday?
Sunday nights, yeah. Sunday nights at 7 o'clock Eastern is when, depends on how caught up with editing I am. So
I get home, you know, after I got to do a podcast, and you do too. Immediately after I get done with this one, I got another one, and then I got to go home and edit. My wife's like, you know, it's one thing to be hunting season and you're gone, but it's like, you got to edit tonight. I mean, how long is this going to be? And I'm like, you know what? And she gets it. She knows it's my calling and what I love to do and how many people it's reaching. And I'm sure you've got family and friends that get that too, but
the podcast uploads on Sunday morning. So now that we're putting it at the end of the podcast, I have to have it done by when I edit on Saturday for the podcast on Sunday. So I've been hitting that Sunday night at 7 o'clock pretty regularly as of lately. So,
well, dude, I just ordered a brand new camera today that I'll be, because I do those. This is at the studio, but the one I do for that's at home. And so hopefully it's a little better quality for this week.
Yep.
You know, when I first met Don years ago, it was after he had written his first book there, with the book he put out, was it Hunting Whitetails in the Real World? What was it? Hunting Trophy Whitetails in the World. Yeah, that was it. And we connected at the ATA show for a number of years. And it was amazing because he wasn't caught up into all the hype and the smoke and mirrors and all the stuff that was there. He just doesn't like that stuff. And so we would go over to the little ATA place where you could sit and have snacks and get something to drink. And we just kind of get away from all that stuff, and we'd sit there and talk about hunting and talk about God. And that was how our relationship got started. And that's kind of how, you know, just meeting you was through Don. And I've kind of, you know, gotten to know some of the funny stuff about you guys. I mean, I know, like, Don just loves shorts. He likes to wear shorts. You know that. And he loves expandable broadheads. Hey, I heard him say on this last podcast that this is one circumstance. Yeah. I won't embarrass you.
He's gonna talk about that in the hunt video when it comes out. He actually admitted it. He said this specific angle, this shot, if I was going to draw a conclusion in that particular situation, it probably would have done just a little bit better job. But the deer still died within 100 yards. And
yeah, my jaw dropped when he said that. I was like, whoa. Never heard him say that before.
The man's maturing as he gets older. What can I say?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me see here. I had a bunch of questions here that I was going to ask. Because when you and I spoke, and I said, Terry, man, I'd love to have you on again, especially now. You know, it's funny when people listen to podcasts or see them on YouTube or whatever, they really do begin to know you. At least a lot about you, maybe not the stuff where we can sit down when no one else is around and kind of get real and honest. Because there's some stuff you're kind of careful because you have such a wide audience. You're still hitting the main things you want to hit, but there's times when you can be one-on-one. Hey, what do you really think about this? Because there has to be a place where iron can sharpen iron and we can just kind of talk through things. But anyhow, I wanted to come back and I wanted to ask you, how did Chasing Giants ever get started? I mean, whose vision? How did this happen?
Totally, Don. I don't like being in the public eye. I've known Don for 20 years and have always been behind the scenes business related to and helped him with different things. Started with marketing and rebranding Real World Wildlife products. And he just came to me and he said, I really want to do this. And I'm like, I think it's a great idea. Go for it. And he's like, no, I want you to do it with me. And I'm like, no way. We actually met each other filming for a film crew when, you know, the DVDs and the Outdoor Channel was so popular, and I couldn't stand it. I grew up as a preacher's son and would see how people basically twist and do things, and I was like, I do not want to be in the public eye at all. I mean, I watched my parents give their lives to the church, and then in some cases it really come back and ruin relationships and friends, and even struggled with the church versus religion for a lot of years. I know we've talked to you and I about that with you and your career in music, and you know, seeing that, and I was just like, man, I just don't want to do it. And he kept pushing and pushing. And I said, okay. I said, are we going to talk about Jesus? And he said, well, we're not going to avoid it. And I said, no, are we going to talk about Jesus? Are we going to use this as a ministry? And he said, yeah, let's do it. And I said, that's when I agreed to do it. And holy cow, were we bad. I mean, we're still awful. I mean, I'm sorry that you waste an hour of your time every week listening to our nonsense, but you know, we don't edit anything. I can't remember the last time that one of us said something that got edited out of the podcast. And our production quality is low. It's as raw as you could imagine. And neither one of us are, you know, Billy Graham's style speakers like you got. You're one of the best storytellers I've ever heard. Neither one of us are like that. But for some reason, people keep supporting us and loving on us. And we are at episode, I think, 245 on a weekly podcast now. So to think that it started out as bad as what it did, now it's on video, and I can't even tell you how many people listen to it. I mean, it's a lot. That's cool. We usually average in the top 25 on iTunes in our category, depending on the week and what's going on. So we are beyond blessed, but you know, I think that the reason that it's taken off is because we've truly tried to be servant leaders and glorify him through everything. I still stand behind that, you know, whether it's the foundation that we started or just not avoiding or being scared to talk about Jesus. I mean, it is what it is. It's part of who we are. We get criticism for it. You know, there's people that leave comments and say, yep, you know, just talk about deer hunting, but that's not who we are. It's part of us, just like deer hunting is. And it's never going to take the focus away from where we want to, and that's the kingdom.
And you know, it is going to bug some people. And you know, the truth does offend, and it makes you look at things. And a lot of guys don't want to look in the mirror. You know, and those are the guys that usually kind of get upset when you start mixing this into it. And you know, there's a time and a place. Like if I'm watching some like a YouTube video of an elk hunt, because I love to elk hunt too, you know, out west, I don't necessarily want to hear a lot of other stuff. I'm just like, I want to know, you know, what was the weather like? What was the wind direction? What elevation were you guys hunting at? You know, and then show me the calling, the responding, you know, how did you work that bull to get it to come in? There's times that I just, you know, right before hunting season, you'll find me sitting watching, you know, elk and deer hunts. I mean, just love it. But for me, and like with you guys too, my kids used to always say, Dad, how do I explain what you do for a living? Because I know I was in music for so many years. But God took my passion for people and for – I don't do as much music anymore. And people always say, would you pull out a song or two? I'm like, yeah, I'll do something like that. But, you know, the reason – you know, people say, why did you kind of quit? And to be honest with you, it's because I was getting my worth and value from it. I think if I was just being honest with that. Because you start wondering, you know, did that song make the top 10? If not, then I must not be good enough. Did people like it? Did they want your autograph? How many people showed up at an event? You know, all that stuff that when you're younger, I think you wrestle with, and you have to. And I think it can be the same thing with you guys. You know, everybody's, once you're out there, they see you as a celebrity, and you don't want to be that, but that's
no way. Yeah. No way.
But it becomes, there's a responsibility that comes with that. And I know that for me, personally, how I'm wired is I love talking hunting and I love talking Jesus. I just do. I love talking family. So yeah, that's just kind of how
I mean, I think that God gives us all passions or things that we enjoy doing. But, you know, just like the disciples did when Jesus called all of them, they weren't all out of Bible college. He didn't go to the seminary in Galilee and say, okay, I'm handpicking the top 12 kids in the homiletics class to come in and right, go be disciples. I mean, he took people from all different backgrounds. And I think whether you enjoy riding bicycles or motorcycles or fish or whatever your hobby is, I still think that there's a way that we can glorify Christ and witness to people and encourage it. We don't have to be Bible thumpers and, you know, be hellfire and brimstone every minute of our life, but we can be that guy that they look to and say, he's not perfect, but he's at peace with how messed up this world is today. And why is he? It's because we have faith in our salvation through Jesus, and we're going to be in heaven one day. As messed up as all this is, that's our assurance. And if we can just resemble that to people we come in contact with whatever our hobby is, I think that's really what we're called to do. That's the foundation of Christianity that Jesus set for us.
I think one of the things I love about you is from our conversations, you're like, you know, I don't care how much you talk about real world when you're out doing your events or how many brochures, whatever you give out. I just want to make sure you're out there talking about Jesus. And for you guys, and I've talked about this before, you know, if you're listening to a podcast, obviously you're watching it right now, and you're looking for that purpose thing in your life, people always ask me, well, can you mix your passions with your purpose? I'm like, well, God gave you passions because those ignite in other men too, and it can be something that can draw them to want to hear more. That's why I do what I do. Am I a deer hunting authority? I wouldn't call myself an authority. I'd say I have a lot of experience because I've worked with a lot of great guys in the outdoor industry that I've learned from. And I think, you know, you guys are some of the authorities. You're studying year-round what's happening.
Leave that to Don. I'm just the tag-along, buddy. We'll leave Don as the authority.
That's really humbled. I know this. I know that Don has stuff going on every day studying this stuff. But you wouldn't be doing what you're doing and having not learned what you've learned through all this without having become somewhat of an authority in this. And I have no doubt of that whatsoever. That's why I wanted to have you on here. Not just because you're on the Chasing Giants, because you've got a lot of experience. And you know, I always say this, it's kind of like I'm just a beggar showing another beggar where I found a loaf of bread. And that's kind of what passing this information on to the guys that they're going to be out there bow hunting, you know, especially the rut. That's why I wanted to bring you in here. Yeah. We can just kind of pass on some stuff. So, well, let me get into it here. I want to ask you a couple questions before we dive in. What's been the biggest challenge that you've had with this whole Chasing Giants thing the last few years?
The biggest challenge of Chasing Giants? You know, I'm pretty lucky. I don't get too much of the aggravation from people too much. But seeing a guy like Don that people know maybe 8%, you know, they watch a podcast and think they know everything about him, or they watch a video. Seeing a man who, and I'm not blowing smoke, he's a dear friend of mine of 20 years that we have always not gotten along. I mean, we even went through a rough patch for a while. But seeing a guy that has the heart that he does get raked over the coals, that's the hardest thing for me, because, you know, it's how can I, from a business standpoint or from a marketing standpoint, put him in a position that doesn't subject him to that? And the answer is I can't. You know, the hate's going to come and Satan's going to try to twist that wherever it is. As far as the podcast itself, we're just stupid rednecks that try to deal with technology every week. And that's a challenge. We don't have a producer like you do that makes us look all pretty, and we do it all ourselves. And, you know, but, you know, from a podcast standpoint, a following, there isn't much that I have to complain about other than sometimes Don gets a lot that he doesn't deserve when it comes to, you know, backlash and pressure, people taking stuff out of context, you know, and then I stress out over, okay, how can I protect him in that? How can I navigate something with, you know, different legal or different marketing strategies or different things to protect him? He's gotten older to where I think he mentioned it when he was on your show a couple weeks ago, that as he's gotten older, he's changed from being Peter cutting somebody's ear off to being a little bit more walk away and let it go. We're still here for our purpose. And I think that's helped a little bit, that now that I know it doesn't bug him as much. But that's the biggest problem. And if that's the only thing we got to worry about is the 1-2% that feel the need to have keyboard courage while they're probably living in their mom's basement, unemployed, playing video games, so be it.
You know, and we talked about this, and I went to dinner with, who was it, with Joe, and was it Al?
Wait. Joe and Al, yeah.
Joe and Al. And I got to kind of hear all their hearts and see the friendship they have. And Don would probably hate me for saying this, but as we sat there, you know, the whole weekend, I had some awesome conversations away from everybody. And I know that he feels it deeply when people, when they judge him, what they don't even know him. you know, and he's trying to offer something to everybody out there, and he's doing a lot of work. You guys are both doing. You just said you just drove home 4 hours this morning from being out there shooting more stuff, and you know, it's really hard. One of the questions that can come up with that kind of stuff is, you know, how do you deal with it when people try to knock you off a pedestal that they created? You didn't try to create it, and they try to knock you off of that. And I say, you know what? How do I even say this sometimes? It's none of your business what other people say about you because it's their issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what if it affects me? Well, if it's affecting you, then you have to go back and considering why is it affecting you as deeply. And something I always say on here is, you know, the big lie that we all buy into is that my performance plus others' opinions equals my self-worth. And that's a lie from the pit of hell. And when we were just kind of talking through that, I said, you know, I don't know why people do that because I've seen your heart for years too. And all I can tell you to do is pray for that person. Because if they're that lost.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, dude, go ahead. Yeah, I'm good.
The pressure that this industry puts on you is no different than what you were talking about with music a little bit earlier. It's how many people are in the stands, a song that I write, how is it, did it get picked up by a recording artist or did it track at a certain level? The hunting industry is the same. It's like somebody wrote a nasty on just this week's podcast on YouTube saying, where's the bucks that I've shot in the last 3 years? I've only shot one buck over a 3 year span, but I'm also on a journey looking for a very specific buck. And I just refuse to cave to the industry pressure to kill something that doesn't meet my personal walk of what I want to do as a hunter. I'm sitting in a room right now with all kinds of 150s and, you know, three deer over 160 and one over 170. I don't need to shoot another one of those. I'm trying to take what I'm trying to do to a certain level. And if that takes me 10 years, that's what I'm going to do. And so many people in the industry that get in trouble cave to that pressure of, I got to get content, I got to get deer on the ground, and then it causes, you know, bad decisions. But the parallel to that, it's like every aspect of our life. It's like bad decisions or the way we navigate our life every day should be about what our walk is, not this peer pressure around us saying you should be or what about this. And Don's probably the best at all of it, and I'll give him credit. I criticize him a lot privately and try to steer him a lot, but he is so good about when he makes his mind up for a goal. This buck he just killed, Zacchaeus, he wanted to kill it from a tree stand, and he killed it very early in the season. But when what people don't understand is his best spots on his farm, he's actually already put a 360 blind up. So he was actually hunting it a harder way in areas on his farm that weren't as forgiving, or they minimized his opportunity so much more when he puts his mind up to something. So, yeah, I mean, it's the pressure in the industry or the community to say we need to produce or we need to do it a certain way. It's hard, but at the same time, it's just, I have my set of values that I'm going to be at and know my role in the show. I admit it 100%. People are there to get Don is the Steph Curry of shooting a basketball when it comes to habitat related to what mature bucks do on that habitat. Nobody else produces content or educates people to the level that he does. And I have a role to support him and make sure that he's in the proper place and that he talks through it and doesn't say something he shouldn't and guide that conversation. So
you do a great job with that.
Very blessed to be in the position I'm in. But I mean, how many people get a chance over 20 years to be at the right-hand side of the Steph Curry of shooting a basketball in the deer hunting industry and be able to learn firsthand from it? But if it wasn't for that, I'd probably be still shooting 140s and 150s and being personally content with it. But
and I've learned to the point. That's your goal, then that's fine.
But I want to challenge myself on a little bit different. So that's where we're at.
So many people get all lit, you know, when you talk to them about, you know, I'm only going to shoot this thing of a deer. And I'm like, you know what? If you're the person that really, that doesn't matter to you, and it's about the story, you know, you weren't seen, heard, or smelled, and you played it right, and you or whatever. That's good. That's great. I'm kind of at the same place too. If I want just, you know, freezer meat, I'm going to go out and I'm going to take my does and try to get them earlier in the season for me, because I hate doing that during the rut, because then you're kind of having to get something back in there to get them out and stir in the woods up. But Well, man, let's get into this stuff. This is going to be a little bit fun now for you guys that are going to be out there bow hunting. You are already, and maybe hunting through the into the third week when the rut winds down in November. What would you say when you're thinking about looking for your location to be hunting the rut? And I know that you got multiple stands depending upon where the food sources are or water. What are some of your secrets that you could maybe pass on to these guys? Hey, here's how I hunt the rut differently than what I would be doing, the first few weeks of the season.
I think, at least my opinion, and you look at body of work to get an opinion, that's probably different than other people out there. But I think you really, during the rut, you have two strategies that's going to be beneficial for any situation. And that's the first one, which is what I prefer to do, is always be on the downwind side of a bedding area. During that rut, understanding how a mature buck uses its nose to wind check. We've all had those situations where we had those magical days in the woods. I used to just think, it was a magical day. I saw 13 bucks running crazy all different directions, but yet a guy 600 yards from me didn't see anything. Right. What I later learned is that I was just in the right place at the right time, meaning the wind. I truly believe that when you have those magical days, that's when you're in the right spot. Every single day during the rut is like that somewhere. It's just whether you're there or not.
And it's different where Don's hunting too with Illinois. It's just mostly flat where I don't know what it's like where you are. I know I hunt southern Indiana down by the Kentucky-Ohio border. And I mean, you get swirling winds almost every day.
Yeah.
Those things.
So you have the downwind side of a bedding area, which is where I will park all day long. The second one is more of a Bobby Worthington, a Joe Miles strategy, where you have a rut funnel. And that applies more to big woods, a lot of topography. It's not to say that we can't create a funnel on the downwind side of a bedding area just to pinch them down a little bit more to be in bow range where we have a tree stand strategically set for access. You sat down and talked with Al Foster. You said at the when you were up there the other week, he was the first one that I know of that really wrote about the pieces of the pie or the clock being at different numbers to where the buck has the wind where he feels secure and you're on the ragged edge of that next slice of pie or that next number on the clock to where it's right for him and almost wrong for you. When you finally get to the point that you understand that, you can select your days and spots of hunting and be so much more successful by hunting less. But as far as rut hunting, early season, we're on food source evening hunts, waiting for them to come out. Hopefully you have high pressure, the right wind, and a little bit of a cold temperature to get them out, get them moving before dark and coming out to hunt over food sources. When that pre-rut and rut happens, they're getting froggy, they're running around, but they're using their nose like a human uses their eyes. And that's either going to be exposed on the downwind side of a bedding area or in a rut funnel, like Bobby Worthington talks about that. I don't have spots, to be honest with you, that I'm in big woods. Mine, where I focus on hunting, is where I can control the bedding area and have access to the sides of those bedding areas to get in and out without intrusion. And, occasionally, you drop a tree or do something that you get them funneled in closer to you, but not in the big woods of, say, Tennessee and the mountains of West Virginia, where you're going in mountain ground looking for those pinch points.
Talk about your entrance and exit, like in the mornings, earlier in the season, the bucks are almost always back to their bedding area before you're going to be in your stand. Yeah. And so how do you play that with the rut? Does your time that you get to your stand change much?
I used to worry about it. And I mean, I even went through phases where I thought, I need to get in 3 hours ahead of time. But the older I got, I don't know if it's the lazier I got or the smarter I got. I'm not sure which. But for every hour that you're in there fighting that tree stand or the cold or your butt getting sore, it's preventing you from staying that hour later around lunch or 1 o'clock. And we all know what midday activity can be during the rut.
Yep.
So I would prefer to get there, you know, 30 minutes before the crack of even the first shooting light and minimize that. So it lets me stay longer through the day. And, you know, if you got hunting pressure around you, you want to stay longer than that neighbor, because you don't know what the, hey, I haven't seen anything, so I'm going to get up and walk around, right, neighbor. You never know what that's going to push your way during the rut. Anything can happen. And the longer you're in the woods, the better your chances are. So I've gotten to where I don't really worry about getting there 2 hours ahead of time. I slip in as quietly as I can. I don't put a lot of intrusion on properties. That's a big difference than me and some of the guys that get really aggressive, but I don't hunt big timber either. Even the farms here in Kentucky that I hunt have big open ridges, and you're still hunting edges. It's just what I grew up hunting and the style and type of properties, you know, up in Illinois, it's not uncommon for us to ride a Quiet Cat electric bike out open a cut bean field as quietly as possible. And you zoom by and you'll actually see deer off to the side, you know, 150 yards, and you just blow in there, lay it over and get up in the tree.
Crazy.
So, I mean, it's different, but I don't go in real early. It affects how long I can stay through the day.
So when do you start doing your rattling sequences, or do you? Some guys just like to leave it be the way it is. And some guys saying, you know, I'll do it, you know, in the morning until about 9 o'clock, or here's how frequently I do it. You know, what has worked for you?
I don't rattle a lot. I've tried it a lot. I have a real good friend, Patrick Simpson, who has rattled in some just giant bucks during the rut. I actually think that I would rather rattle right now through the beginning of the rut than during the rut, because I don't think we've all seen it. When a buck is on a hot doe chasing it, the likelihood of doing anything to pull that buck off of a hot doe, just like you mentioned when that buck ran up on you, to pull that buck off of a hot doe where he's going to give up a chance for another buck to take that doe, to change that buck's mind, I think you'll rattle in bucks, but is it necessarily the biggest one? Now, down in Texas where the buck to doe ratios are what they are, I think that's a different ballgame. I'm talking about where we hunt. But I think right now we're dealing with a situation, especially when we have cold fronts, of this pent up aggression that a mature whitetail has waiting for that first doe to come in. You know, they're starting to bump deer around. They're just going absolute berserks on scrapes and rubs right now. You know, whether they run home to their summer range or not, you know, they're looking and they're anticipating and they're at this fever pitch. I think right now is a great time to rattle, just to get them curious. And I've done less and less of it over the years, to where I don't even honestly carry rattling horns anymore.
That's, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat. In the earlier part, you know, right before the rut, like now, I think it was the King Ranch down in Texas that did a test with all these collared deer, and was where they were checking to see what percentage would respond to a rattling sequence. And it's about 70% of mature bucks were responding. But the problem was you weren't seeing them with the naked eye, because they would go, you know, upwind of you, and they're trying to get you, and they beat about 100 yards. Well, when the cover is the way it is right now, you're not really seeing them at 100 yards, but they're smelling you. And that's right. Why we don't know that there's about 70% will actually respond. You're just not seeing them. And closing that distance, that becomes the hard part. And I'm like you. It's like, I want that curiosity right now. But once they start running stuff, I mean, I was watching, it was last year, I had it was probably about a 150, and he was wanting to breed with his doe. And they were at about 60 yards, but it was a little bit too thick to really kind of, I wasn't going to shoot at 60 yards, but I was watching them. And he wouldn't move. I mean, I was doing another, you know, doe bleat or whatever. And I finally did a snort wheeze, thinking maybe that'd tick him off, like he's got another buck in his area. He couldn't care less. Focused on her.
People will start doing what they feel comfortable with in the woods. And I'm just not personally comfortable with it. But I, like I said, my best friend, he goes to Illinois. We hunt Illinois every year together. He's rattled in some bruisers over the years, and he's very comfortable with it. So I think it just depends on what your style is, how you like doing it. Like I said, I think that I focus more on that deer's nose to be in the right spot that I'm going to get that cruising activity all day, whether that buck is on a doe or not, and understanding how they use the wind. But there is no doubt about it. You catch a buck in the right frame of mind and be able to rattle, you can get some work done quick on it. It's just, I've never been real good at it personally.
There's a couple of strange things this year. I've been seeing tons of scrapes for weeks, and I'm like, well, this is crazy. But I'm not seeing the rubs on the trees like I usually see by now. It's, and then to see some of these, that buck the other day running these does this early, I think you guys talked about that. Was it 2 weeks ago? You were talking about guys were seeing bucks chasing does early.
Yeah. And we actually talked about the lack of rubs this year, but Friday night, which would have been October, what would that have been? 18th off the top of my head. We had five bucks underneath of us and one up and comer that, let's just say an up and comer on the do not shoot list would have been bigger than any deer that I've ever shot, was underneath of us for 10 minutes, just absolutely destroying every tree that was around us. And we got some unbelievable footage of this 4-year-old. It was really cool. So I think it's, I don't know. I think that there's, we sometimes overcomplicate it a little bit too much. We know what time of the year it is. We know that, the weather is going to drive what we see as far as daylight movement. And that's going to play out the rest of the year is this weather. So when we find that right window, like this coming Wednesday, which will be the 23rd, where I'm going to drive back to Illinois, 4.5 hours up, 4.5 hours back for a 2-hour sit. And it's going to be northwest wind, 20 degree temperature drop. That's what I'm looking for.
And, you better be careful how much you say you're driving, because the wives out there that hear this are going to be going, you would drive 4.5 hours for that, right? Happy wife, happy life. Guys, make sure you're loving your wife before hunting. what about hunting scrapes? You know what? Years ago, I was with a guy named Wade Nolan. Wade passed away about 5 years ago with Whitetail University. And, you know, I worked with him quite a bit. That's why I learned a lot of the stuff that I was blessed to be able to do. And he would go in, you know, with the rubber gloves. We would take like fishing line, and we would bend a sapling over and tie it so that it was where we needed it to be, strip the leaves, make the mock scrape. Mm-hmm. I still, like you said, I think people go, you know, whatever you've done, you'll continue to do. I still do that. Like where my stands are now, there may be some other scrapes I'm seeing over there, but I don't feel like going into my climber and getting all sweaty and getting up there. I'll just try to get back and make a mock scrape somewhere, you know, 20, 22 yards away from where I'm going to be, try to get the right angle off of it. Right. What do you create mocks at all?
In some cases, I've gotten to where after being around Don, I really like the rope scrape. If you use it correctly, too many people are going to Tractor Supply and buying a piece of rope and taking it straight to the woods. So it has that chemical smell. You really have to cure that thing for a year outside. Buy a spool of it on Amazon right now and start cutting it into about 6-foot pieces and lay them out in the tree limbs in your yard. You got to get that chemical smell out of it before a deer will use it a lot. But I know of guys that take pine branches and wire tie them onto, you know, other limbs that hang out. They hold scent really well. Bending a tree over when it's young, and it's, they're all great ways. And we can, if it's in the right spot, we can get deer to start using it. Hunting scrapes is awesome right now. A lot of nighttime activities on scrapes. I tend not to focus on scrapes as we get into the rut though, because you're that mature buck that I'm after is going to end up being on does. And the only things that's checking the scrapes are your 1.5 and 2.5 year olds that get their butt kicked every time they go near a doe. So, you know, I gave, if you all want to use them, I was checking trail cameras this week. I gave you all some pictures of a buck that we're watching that just absolutely destroyed, a scrape. It's a series of still pictures. So he's a good buck we're watching is potentially something that we want to document and put a story together. But this is not a mock scrape. This is actually a scrape that historically has been there for years. And I have a stand on the inside corner just maybe 16 yards past this scrape. So you can barely see the corn standing in the background. I'll watch that. Yeah. I'll walk that corn edge to the stand, staying away from that edge. and then slip up into the stand and be able to shoot at that scrape if I need to. But this buck, over a period of time, I can't see the date on the screen. I can't remember. I think it was earlier in the month, maybe around the 6th to the 9th of October. He literally almost destroyed this whole tree. He had the tree broke off in his antlers. He was rubbing those things so much on it, and went to go fight another buck with part of the tree still stuck in his head. So it was pretty cool pictures. Y'all can use that wherever you want. But yeah, decent buck that we're watching, and hopefully he'll turn into something bigger and something we want to chase soon.
I used to love to go in, and when you have the wood edge near the corn like that, where you've got 20 yards in between, I used to love to go in and mash down some of that corn and get a blind back in there. Don't make it totally exposed, but allow your windows to be straight. So if you get that wind blowing right into the corn, it was always a sweet little setup.
Yep, dandy of a spot, yeah.
Do you do much blind hunting? I'm not talking about elevated blinds. Do you do much blind hunting at all outside of turkey or?
Believe it or not, more than what most people think. A lot of my Kentucky hunting on alfalfa fields in September are ground hunting out of blinds. When we're in early September, so Kentucky archery season always opens the first Saturday in September. That's why we're able to kill velvet deer. You'll occasionally get deer and velvet down here. Alfalfa fields are just the magnet. And sometimes you have to put a pop-up blind, brush it in, where we have big fence rows that are overgrown with multiflora rows or rose bushes. I've taken hedge trimmers and basically cut a cave back in all of these briars and set, and of course it's all shadowed in and lay stuff in front of you. Oh, I've killed quite a few deer in September from the ground, out of a ground blind. Don't do so much at the rut. But you got to remember too, for the last 20 years, I hunt early season in Kentucky and then moved to Illinois for the rut. And then wherever I have deer or a tag for late season. So I don't do too much Kentucky hunting in the rut.
I got to find it. I took a blind. It was after all the leaves were down and there was a big group of oak trees, and I put so many leaves that it was literally 2/3 of the way up, and I only had one main window open and my zipper in the back to get in. It looked like Sasquatch lived in this thing. It was awesome. What was I going to ask you? Something about the blind. Oh, like with the blind stuff. When I drive down to Southern Indiana, I always see guys that have left their blinds out, and that UV, man, just turn them pink.
Yep.
It really.
Yep.
So guys, if you're using blinds out there, you know, you got to make sure that you're, and they actually, they make a product. What is the name of it? I think it's called Extreme Water Guard is the name of it. And it keeps them from like molding and mildewing and stuff, but it'll also, it's got a UV block in it to protect it, to keep it from that. But, yep. You know, if you're out there hunting blinds, like Terry was just saying, you know, making sure that you're getting it brushed in, you might even be able to find some little pockets and dips, you know, back in the woods where you can kind of get it down to get your profile a little bit less. And here's the other thing, you know, we were talking, I think it was Don and I were talking, it's like, you know, a whitetail has close to 300 million, you know, we was talking about these receptors where like a dog is 220 and we're 5 million. And guys will go out and they'll try to waterproof their blinds. Hey, I got this rain. I want to be out there right before this is going to be ending. And they say, but I want to make sure my blind has been waterproof. And Terry just said something about this. You know, that smell, that scent, like that rope he was talking about, you got to let that thing cure. You got to let it be out there. If you're spraying your stuff down with waterproofing, that's awesome. But even though you can't smell it 2 or 3 days after you've sprayed it, that smell is gone, they still pick up on it. So you really got to make sure you're giving it plenty of time.
I haven't done a lot of pop-up blind hunting except for turkeys in a long time. We did take some into standing corn and brush it in like you talked about a couple times. The most success I've had with ground blinds has actually been on hay fields with that redneck hay bale blind. And we would,
yeah.
It's basically just it looks like a hay bale. And I even got to the point 1 year where, you know, it has the black windows. So mm-hmm. I put the windows in the blind backwards, so it was always black. So as those deer are walking by it the whole season, it's always black holes. And believe it or not, I even 1 year went to every hay bale that was around the field and painted windows with black spray paint on them so that every hay bale had black windows on it. And then we put a line of them out there with the hay bale blind right in the center, and the deer will walk within 2 feet of it And,
yeah, in the day we used to get hay bales and get them out there, and then we just kind of get it because we were just that was probably like in the 1980s.
Yep,
we had one of those, you know, hay bale blinds you talk about, and those straight line winds hit it, and there was like nothing left. I mean, we had another tower blind that just destroyed like that. Well, man,
you want a funny story on that one, real quick? This will only take a second. So I got this genius idea one year that I'm going to build. The problem with those redneck hay bale blinds is you can't stand up in them. So I wanted to build one that I could stand up and shoot a bow out of. So I got a wooden crate and built the frame, put mesh wire around it. And I went and got the landscape fabric with the straw, you know, that they put over when they seed a yard, with wrapped this whole thing up. And we had this giant hay bale. I'm 6'1" and I could stand up inside of this hay bale. And we were taking it to the field like mid-August, and we didn't have a way to transport it. So my friend Patrick, that I was just telling you about, he has this big international tractor with hay forks on the back. So bright idea. We go in, back it under, move. We should have had pallet forks, but we didn't. And we're on the back of the tractor, and it wanted to teeter-totter a little bit. So I was like, I'll ride into it and hold on to the back of the tractor through the window to keep it from doing this. And he went through the gate on the field and turned too sharp. And there I go off of it. And I was the hamster inside of the hay bale blind trying to, I lasted like on my third step. It just became all the way to the end. And he jumped off the tractor, ran to the bottom of the hill. And I just remember I was laying on my back with my feet up in the air, wondering what was broke. But the hay bale blind stayed in one piece. I was not. But
okay, I got an idea. This will be fun. So we're talking about blinds just for a second before we kind of move to wrap this up. I want to throw something out there. So my buddies, we do love to use blinds in turkey hunting in the spring. And so I still have some that I will leave set up. Like, I'll put them out 3 months before the season. And again, I make sure that they're protected with the UV stuff, but because I want the deer to get used to them. But whenever I hunt with a buddy out of a blind, we have this list, the top 10. Remember David Letterman? He always had the top 10 list. So we came up with this. We said, what's the top 10 things you never say in a hunting blind? Like when you're hunting with one of your buddies. So you guys keep it clean, okay? Post some of these things on this after the episode comes out on YouTube or whatever. What's a top 10 list, something you would never say to your buddy when you're hunting in a blind? This will get really fun. Keep it clean, please. Okay, so let's kind of wrap this up. I know we both have another podcast to get to, but I wanted to say to you, first of all, I appreciate the support you had for this ministry and your friendship. And I know how real you guys are. And I don't know why people sometimes feel like they got to get in and try to impose their stuff. Maybe they're just wanting to be somebody. I don't know what it is. We all can struggle with feeling like we want to be somebody. But I do know that what God has been doing in and through you guys is exploded. When we first started talking about a podcast, I said, man, my numbers are only like this big. And I said, what do you have to do? And you said, it'll be that way for a while. Don't lose heart. And then all of a sudden something will just happen and God will orchestrate it. And I told you I was going to maybe throw a little bit of a surprise question at the very end. I didn't know if I was going to do it or not, but it's bugging me. So if you will just, and you can answer this however you want to answer, nothing gets censored here. But we got the election coming up in just a couple of weeks. I'm not trying to ask you who you're voting for. I'm not trying to go down all your political beliefs and religious beliefs here. I think I probably know pretty much just from being your friend where you stand on that stuff. But my wife has really been struggling. And I get it. You know, her need for security is different than mine. And because of her story, things would, you know, she never knew who her dad was. And her mom left her when she was 8. But this whole thing has really been bothering her. And the other night, and I'm not saying anything that's hearsay. This is all out there. It's just a process, because I think a lot of you guys are processing this. What do we do? Like the other night at the rally, and the VP, current VP, who was running for president, was talking something about, you know, the abortion issue. And was it two guys in the crowd? One of them, was it Jesus is Lord or Jesus is King or something like that? I think they yelled out. I don't know if you saw this or not, Terry, but they were yelling that out. And she turns to them and she goes, oh, you're at the wrong rally, when they yelled out Jesus is Lord or Jesus is King, whichever it was. And when I heard that, you know, I look at policy. I'll be honest with you. I'm not a fan of Trump's personality. you know, the way that he can be degrading sometimes to people, because I'm not wired like that. But I also look at policy and I know where I stand on policy. And so when I look at this, I'm looking at all these things and I have to make the best choice for me that lines up with my beliefs in God. For me, I don't mock God. You know, even when his name is mentioned, I get silent because I really do believe in that moment I'm in his presence. I mean, I'm in his presence all the time. But we have a lot of hunters out there, and I saw the statistic, I forget what it is, they aren't registered to vote. And I don't know if you know the number or anything with that, but it's a lot of hunters. And so, guys, you got to vote. Your voice needs to be heard. And so my question really for you, Terry, because my wife was messaging me even today, she goes, why don't you ever talk about this kind of stuff, you know, on your podcast or from the stage when you're speaking for events and stuff? And I said, you know, I'm trying to bring unity to people. And so I always say, you know, the problem with our generation is we've been taught what to think rather than how to think. And I want to encourage people to think through what you're thinking. It's 2 Corinthians 10:6. You're taking every thought captive. But when you saw this stuff happen, and I know you do, and I'm sure you and Don have your conversations, and your wife and everybody, your buddies, I guess my question would be, what is our responsibility as Christians about how much do we speak about it? How do we speak about it? And if we don't speak about something that we really feel stirring in our soul, are we being complicit?
I think that it's a cultural issue that our nation's gone through, and I'll try not to go on too big of a rant here, but we are in this cultural divide where, whether it's social media has given everybody keyboard courage to just argue and badmouth anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Take the hunting community, for example. You could have a guy post a picture of him sitting in an elevated blind with his kid with a rifle in a vise, and half of the comments are like, good luck, and half of the comments, that's not real hunting. You should be sitting on a rock on the top of the mountain barefooted with a longbow or a spear or a slingshot. That's not hunting. And fishing is no different. Golf is no different. Every aspect of our culture right now, instead of being a group of hunters, a group of fishermen, or a group of Christians, a group of faith believers going for the greater good and saying, as a group, we are going for what is best for all of us, versus bickering about every little nitpicking thing. I don't know what put us in this situation, but it's created amongst the outdoor community, the fishing community, and especially inside of not even the church, but the Christian believers. Okay. Yeah. That we spend so much time bickering about, well, Trump did this, and I don't like Trump did this. And it's really simple. You're going to vote for moral, biblical principles, or you're not. And for the people that just, so there's these people that get in twisted and they argue and they make comments, and there's the people that find it repulsive, so they pull back and don't say anything. And right now there's a bunch of these people that are pulling back, not saying anything, or saying, I don't like either candidate, I'm just not going to vote.
Yeah.
By you not voting, you're allowing Satan to work inside the abortion agenda or inside the pornographic industry and all of these other things that are going on with this liberal, corrupt garbage that's already penetrating our kids at colleges. It's going to be even worse the more we let our political officers drive this agenda. So the fact that we get so repulsed by the people for some reason that think that they're an expert on every topic, and they comment and criticize, and we just pull back. People, I just beg you, this is the time for us as believers to, you don't have to speak out one time. You don't have to wear your I voted sticker to work, but be the person God asked us to be. And that's be a respectful Christian that tries to direct the way this country was intended to by founding fathers, and not letting Satan just take this thing down the toilet like it is.
Yep.
It's ruining our hunting industry. It's ruining our schools. It's now ruining our political side of what's running this country. I mean, people want to downgrade and talk about, and I'm not a big Trump fan myself, But what he stands for from a conservative perspective, I align with.
Yeah, me too.
But yet they'll criticize his morality, but then you got a lady who has the past that she had that's in question that she had, and that's, or you just say that what I have the real problem with is the people that says, I don't like either one of them. I'm just not voting. And folks, when you do that, you're basically giving them a win.
And I've heard one platform across the board talking about God. Do they have their issues? Do we all have sin? Absolutely. But I've seen people change. I've seen humility be coming into this office right now where there wasn't. I'm talking about the past administration where there was humility coming in. There's seeking God for direction. And then I see what we're seeing now and what I just heard the other night said from stage about, you know, Jesus is Lord and she comes back with you at the wrong rally. And those boys, and they admit it,
there's still people that will not even be receptive of that. They admitted it.
Yep. And those boys were bullied. They were shoved. They were thrown out. They were cussed at, yelled at. And, you know, I don't want to be on the other end of that stick when, yeah. Well, listen, I just want to encourage you guys, get out there. If you're a believer, you really got to think through what you're thinking, okay? Seriously. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm saying seek God in all things with this. And you have to really get involved, and you need to vote on these issues that if they matter to God enough that it's in the Word, it should matter to us as a believer. I want to show you guys a video here in just a second. And I told you about speaking for this event. These were men that came down. I was so blown away that they were using my book for a small group study. And to be able to come in and speak to them, like when you and Don go and speak for an event, people, they come up and they've got a respect for something, and they want to ask questions, they want to learn. These guys that day were like a sponge taking in all the stuff that I was teaching them that day. And I always do it through like the outdoor stories and then bring it back, you know, from the wilds back to the home front. But at the very end, you know, I always love coming back with saying, if you don't know God as Lord and Savior, and I explain what that looks like and what that means. And when we were all done, there was one man who he said he wanted to receive Christ right now, and he stepped forward and he wanted to get baptized right then. So they got the baptistry filled up, and when he got in there, you know, he didn't come prepared for this. Nobody did. So it wasn't a matter of I came with my towel and my shorts today. No, this was the real thing. And it happened right then. And all these, about 60 guys all came up and they surrounded the baptistry in the front of this, in this church. And as he was baptized, those men just cheered him on. And I'm just telling you guys right now, you know, maybe you love hunting, but the thing is, look at the creation that you're seeing out there. That's where I see God more than almost anywhere in my life, because I'm going, how could anyone ever doubt that some higher power, I'm talking God, created all this? And so if you don't know, Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior, I want you to pursue that. I want you to begin to ask God to move into your life. And if you're feeling this right now, I don't ever do this on this podcast, but if you're feeling right now, like, you know that you're not living the life of God would want you to live, and maybe you've never received him as Lord and Savior, I want to invite you to do that. I don't care if you're in your truck driving right now. I don't care if you got headphones in, you're sitting in a deer stand. I don't care where you are. It doesn't matter. The thing is, I know that when I look in the mirror each day, I want to be able to say, God, I do trust you. I do put my faith in you. I ask forgiveness of my sins. And here's the beautiful thing. Once you've done that, and you invite Christ to come in, his Spirit goes into your spirit. That's now your one new true identity. You're not transformed. You're transfigured in that moment. Transformation will happen over the next, you know, years, whatever, until we go to see Jesus. The change of how we live our life, that's a process, like getting out of credit card debt. But the moment that you give your life to Christ and you ask him to come in and forgive you of your sins and you ask him to be Lord and Savior of your life, it's a done deal. You have been transfigured. The old is gone and the new has come. And so as we wrap up today, I want to invite you to just invite him in. And then if you go tell somebody, really, because you're going to need brothers to walk with you and say, I need help in this journey. Just like we need help with learning how to hunt the rut, you know, or whatever the thing would be. You're going to need help to navigate how to walk through this life, because I'm telling you what, the enemy's going to come after you even harder once you receive Christ. Because he wants you to not get involved with making a difference in the world. And I've said this so many times, that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous, dangerous for good, because he's been unleashed. So, Terry, I want to say, man, thank you, brother, for being here. And I respect everything you guys are doing. And I know you've had a roller coaster ride with God moving you from position to position with some other stuff, but you have stayed faithful. Much respect.
I'm a very blessed person, far more than I deserve.